Welcome to your personalized deep dive. Today we're diving into the world of eczema.
Oh, eczema.
You've sent us a really interesting mix of research notes and medical textbook excerpts.
We've got some personal questions in there too.
Even some personal questions about this common skin condition, so let's get right to it.
Yeah, and you know we've sifted through it all.
To bring us the need to know.
By the end of this deep dive, you'll be able to tell the difference between atopic and seborrheic dermatitis.
Get a handle on the science behind them.
And learn how to keep them in check.
Okay, so first things first, eczema. What exactly are we talking about here?
It seems like a lot of different skin issues get lumped into that category.
Yeah.
You're right. Eczema is kind of an umbrella term for a bunch of skin conditions.
That cause dryness, itchiness, and just general skin discomfort.
Think of it like a big family reunion.
With a bunch of quirky relatives.
Oh, I like that.
And I'm guessing atopic and seborrheic dermatitis are two of the most, let's say, outspoken relatives.
Exactly. They're two of the most common types of eczema.
And they both have their own unique personalities, so to speak.
So to speak, yeah.
Okay, so let's meet the family.
Starting with atopic dermatitis.
I know it's the one most people think of when they hear eczema.
It's chronic.
Often starts in childhood.
And let's not forget that intense itching.
And those dry patches, sometimes they can crack, ooze, or even form crusts. Not fun.
Not fun at all. And while atopic dermatitis can show up anywhere,
it tends to favor certain spots.
Like the face.
Hands, the insides of the elbows, and behind the knees.
For babies and toddlers, it often pops up on their cute little faces.
So that's atopic dermatitis.
What about seborrheic dermatitis?
How's it different?
Well, it's chronic too.
But it's more of a come and go kind of condition.
It likes to hang out on the scalp. In fact, mild seborrheic dermatitis on the scalp is actually what we call dandruff.
Interesting. So dandruff is actually a form of eczema.
Yep. And in babies, seborrheic dermatitis often shows up on the scalp as cradle cap.
Those scaly patches.
It also tends to appear in areas with lots of oil glands.
Like the face, chest.
And even the beard area.
Okay, so two very different branches of the eczema family tree. But how do you tell them apart just by looking?
Good question. With atopic dermatitis, you might see different colors depending on your skin tone. It could be red, gray, brown, or even purplish. The skin will probably look dry and dull, maybe a bit flaky or peeling.
And for seborrheic dermatitis?
Think red, greasy, inflamed skin, often with white or yellowish scales. The rash might look a bit raised and could even form under facial or body hair.
So we've got their locations and their appearances down, but what's actually going on beneath the surface? What makes these types of eczema flare up?
That's where we delve into the fascinating world of the immune system. You see, atopic dermatitis involves a bit of an overreaction from the immune system.
So it's like the immune system is attacking the skin.
In a way, yes. There are these things called cytokines. Think of them like little chemical messengers.
And in atopic dermatitis, certain cytokines go a little overboard.
Too many of these chemical messages are being sent out. What does that actually do to the skin?
Well, one of the main players here is a cytokine called IL-31. This one is basically the itch cytokine. It's the main culprit behind that intense itchiness that makes you want to scratch like crazy. And then there's another cytokine called TSLP, which can get triggered by things like allergens and irritants, leading to more inflammation.
Wow, so it's like a chain reaction of inflammation. And what about the skin barrier itself? How does that play into all of this?
The skin barrier is super important.
It's like a wall that protects us from the outside world.
Keeping moisture in and irritants out. But with atopic dermatitis, this barrier is weakened.
So like a wall with cracks in it, letting all the bad stuff through.
Exactly. There are key proteins that help keep the skin barrier strong. And with atopic dermatitis, these proteins are often lacking. One of the most important ones is called filaggrin. When filaggrin isn't doing its job properly, the skin becomes more vulnerable to things like allergens, irritants, and microbes, all of which can trigger more inflammation.
Got it. So atopic dermatitis is all about an overactive immune system and a weakened skin barrier. What about seborrheic dermatitis? What's the story there?
Well, it's still a bit of a mystery.
But we know a type of yeast called Malassezia plays a role. This yeast lives naturally on the skin.
But in people with seborrheic dermatitis, it seems to trigger an inflammatory response.
So it's like the immune system is trying to fight off the yeast, and that causes the redness and scaling.
That's the general idea. And things like stress, hormonal changes, and even certain medications can make this response even more dramatic.
So both types of eczema involve the immune system getting a bit too enthusiastic. But what about those specific triggers that cause flare-ups? I know for me, certain things can really set off my eczema.
Absolutely. And those triggers can be different depending on the type of eczema you have. For atopic dermatitis, allergens like pollen, dust mites, and even certain foods can be culprits. Irritants are another big one. Things like soaps, detergents, certain fabrics, even pets.
And let's not forget about stress. Every time I have a deadline, my eczema seems to know.
Stress is a major trigger for both atopic and seborrheic dermatitis. It's your body's way of saying, hey, take a break, but in a very uncomfortable way.
Ugh, tell me about it. So allergens, irritants, stress. Anything else we should be on the lookout for?
Heat and changes in temperature can also be a problem for atopic dermatitis. For seborrheic dermatitis, hormonal changes, illness, harsh hair products, and cold, dry weather can all contribute.
So it's like a minefield out there. Avoiding triggers sounds like it's a big part of managing eczema, right?
Absolutely.
Knowing your triggers and minimizing contact is essential for both types of eczema. And that's what we'll delve into next.
Okay, so we've talked about the different types of eczema and what causes them. Now let's get to the good stuff.
How do we actually manage these conditions?
Because honestly, it can feel like a constant battle.
It definitely can be. But the good news is there are a lot of effective strategies out there
to help you get control of your eczema
and minimize those pesky flare-ups.
Okay, I'm all ears. Where do we even begin?
Well, first things first, remember those triggers we talked about?
Yeah.
Minimizing contact with them is crucial.
Right. But some things are unavoidable, like pollen season or dry winter air.
True. You can't control everything, but even small changes can make a big difference.
Like?
If dust mites are an issue, for example.
Okay.
You can try dust mite covers for your mattress and pillows. And if certain fabrics irritate your skin, opt for softer, more breathable materials like cotton.
Good tips. What about skincare? Is there a magic routine that works for everyone?
I wish. But unfortunately, it's not one size fits all. However, establishing a gentle and consistent skincare routine is super important for both atopic and seborrheic dermatitis.
Okay, so what does a gentle routine actually look like?
Well, for starters, let's talk about cleansers. Harsh soaps can strip away the skin's natural oils.
Which is the opposite of what we want.
Look for mild, fragrance-free cleansers specifically designed for sensitive skin.
So reading those labels carefully is key. What about moisturizing? I know that's supposed to be a big one, but honestly, I've tried so many moisturizers over the years with mixed results.
I hear you, but moisturizing is truly a cornerstone of eczema management, especially for atopic dermatitis. And the key here is using emollients.
Emollients.
So those are different from regular moisturizers.
Yeah.
Emollients are thicker and creamier. Think of them like heavy-duty moisturizers that really lock in hydration. And you want to use them at least twice a day, even when your skin is clear.
Wait, really? Even when I'm not having a flare-up?
Yes, that's the key. Emollients help repair and strengthen that protective skin barrier, which can prevent future flare-ups. Some dermatologists even recommend washing with an emollient instead of soap.
Washing with moisturizer. That's a new one for me. I'm definitely going to have to try that.
It might sound strange, but it can be really effective. And as with cleansers, look for emollients that are free of dyes, fragrances, and alcohol, which can irritate sensitive skin.
Got it. So emollients are a must for atopic dermatitis. What else is in the eczema management toolbox? Because sometimes moisturizers alone just don't cut it.
Right. And if you're finding that over-the-counter emollients aren't doing enough, your doctor might recommend topical corticosteroids.
I've used those before. They work pretty well, but I always worry about side effects, especially with long-term use.
That's a valid concern. Topical corticosteroids come in different strengths, and it's super important to use them exactly as your doctor directs. Overuse can lead to skin thinning, so it's about finding the right balance.
Makes sense. So corticosteroids can be helpful, but we want to use them wisely. What about those moments when the itching is just unbearable?
Oh, the itch. It can be brutal. For those super itchy moments, oral antihistamines can be a lifesaver. They block histamine, which is a chemical that's released during allergic reactions and contributes to that urge to scratch.
So they're like an internal itch fighter.
Exactly. Just keep in mind that some antihistamines can make you drowsy, so you might want to save those for nighttime use.
Good to know. Now, we've talked a lot about atopic dermatitis. What about seborrheic dermatitis? Are the management strategies similar?
There are definitely some overlaps, but there are also some specific treatments for seborrheic dermatitis. One of the go-tos is medicated shampoo.
Okay, so not just any old shampoo will do.
Right. These shampoos have special ingredients like pyrithione zinc, selenium sulfide, or ketoconazole that help control the yeast that contributes to seborrheic dermatitis. They also help remove those flaky scales.
Interesting. So it's actually treating the underlying cause, not just masking the symptoms.
Exactly. And while these shampoos are typically used on the scalp, your dermatologist might recommend using them on other affected areas too.
Got it. So medicated shampoos are a good first step for seborrheic dermatitis. What if the shampoo alone isn't enough?
Well, in that case, your doctor might suggest adding a topical antifungal cream, often containing ketoconazole, to really target that Malassezia yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to atopic dermatitis, topical corticosteroids can be used short-term to help manage inflammation.
So corticosteroids seem to be a common thread for both types of eczema.
They are. But again, it's important to use them sparingly and under the guidance of a healthcare professional. There are also other options out there for more moderate to severe cases of seborrheic dermatitis, like calcineurin inhibitors or even light therapy.
Wow. It's amazing how many different approaches there are to managing eczema these days.
It really is. And of course, for cradle cap, the approach is much simpler. Usually, gently loosening the scales with an emollient like mineral oil or petroleum jelly, and then washing the baby's hair more frequently is all it takes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've covered a lot of ground here, but before we wrap up this part of the deep dive, I'm curious, in the UK, are there any specific guidelines for treating eczema?
Yes. In the UK, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, or NICE, provides guidelines for managing various health conditions, including eczema. However, we don't have access to those specific guidelines here. If you're in the UK, the best resource would be the official NICE website or a healthcare professional who is familiar with those guidelines.
That makes sense. So we've talked about identifying triggers, establishing a good skincare routine, and even explored some of the different treatment options available. But I have to ask, with all the advancements in eczema management, is there still a sense of mystery surrounding these conditions?
You know, what's fascinating is that even with all the progress we've made, there's still so much we're learning about eczema.
Hmm.
We've come a long way in understanding the causes and developing effective treatments, but the research continues. This deep dive has given you a solid foundation, but the most important thing to remember is that everyone is different. What works for one person might not work for another, and that's perfectly okay.
So it's really about finding what works best for you.
Exactly, and that's where that open communication with your doctor comes in. Together, you can create a personalized treatment plan that addresses your unique needs and concerns.
Great advice. And speaking of ongoing research, one of the things that caught my eye in your notes was a question about the connection between eczema and the gut microbiome.
Yes. That's a really interesting area of research that's gaining a lot of attention these days.
I have to admit, I'm a little fuzzy on that connection. I've heard about the gut microbiome and how it impacts overall health, but how does it relate to eczema?
Well, it's still an emerging field of study, but there's growing evidence suggesting that the gut microbiome, that vast community of bacteria living in our intestines, might actually play a role in the development and severity of eczema.
Okay, so how does that work? Are we talking about certain bacteria making the skin more prone to inflammation?
That's one theory. Some researchers believe that an imbalance in the gut microbiome, what we call dysbiosis, can lead to something called leaky gut.
Leaky gut, that sounds a bit alarming.
It's not as scary as it sounds. Basically, it means that the lining of the intestines becomes more permeable, allowing substances to leak into the bloodstream that normally shouldn't. And some of these substances can trigger inflammation throughout the body, including the skin.
Interesting. So it's not just about what we put on our skin, but also what we put in our bodies.
Precisely. And this is where things like probiotics and prebiotics come in.
Right. I've heard about those, but I'm not really sure what they are or how they work.
Think of probiotics as the good guys. Those friendly bacteria that help maintain a healthy balance in the gut. Prebiotics, on the other hand, are like food for the probiotics, helping them thrive.
So it's like tending a garden, but for your gut.
I love that analogy. And just like a garden needs the right nutrients to flourish, so does our gut microbiome. The research is still in its early stages, but some studies have shown that certain probiotics might help reduce eczema severity, particularly in children.
That's promising. So in addition to all the other strategies we've talked about, it might be worth considering ways to support gut health as well.
It's definitely something to discuss with your doctor. They can help you determine if it's an appropriate avenue to explore based on your individual needs.
So where does this leave our listener who's been diligently absorbing all this information? What's the main takeaway?
Well, I think the key message here is that while eczema can be a challenging condition to live with, There are so many resources and strategies available to help you manage it effectively. From avoiding triggers and maintaining a good skincare routine to exploring new avenues like gut health, the power to take control of your eczema is within your reach.
That's empowering. And don't forget the importance of that ongoing conversation with your doctor. They can be your guide and partner in navigating the complexities of eczema.
Absolutely. And as research continues to uncover new insights, there's even more reason to be optimistic about the future of eczema treatment. Who knows what breakthroughs lie ahead?
Speaking of breakthroughs, I have one final question for you. What excites you most about the future of dermatology?
You know, what really excites me is the increasing focus on personalized medicine. We're moving away from a one-size-fits-all approach and towards treatments that are tailored to each individual's unique genetic makeup, lifestyle, and environmental factors. This holds immense promise for conditions like eczema, where there's so much variation in how people experience and respond to treatment.
Personalized medicine for skin conditions. That's incredible. It feels like we're on the cusp of a whole new era in dermatology.
We absolutely are, and that's what I find so fascinating about this field. There's always something new to discover, always a deeper layer to explore.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot to think about in this deep dive.
From understanding the different types of eczema and the science behind them, to exploring all those practical management strategies.
Even peeking into the future of dermatology, it's been quite a journey.
It has. And I hope our listener feels empowered to take what they've learned and apply it to their own journey with eczema.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one piece of advice you'd want our listener to take away?
I think the most important thing is to remember that you're not alone. Eczema is incredibly common, and there are so many people out there who understand what you're going through. Don't be afraid to reach out for support, whether it's from your doctor, a dermatologist, or even online communities dedicated to eczema.
That's so important. Sharing experiences and knowledge can make a huge difference.
It really can.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed, there's a lot you can do to manage eczema effectively.
Yeah.
So be proactive, be patient, and most importantly, be kind to yourself.
Beautifully said. And who knows, maybe our listener will be inspired to dive even deeper into the world of eczema and contribute to those future breakthroughs we talked about, because as we've learned today, there's always more to discover.
You know, here's where it gets really interesting. Imagine a world where we can not only manage eczema, but actually prevent it altogether. That's the ultimate goal. And with the pace of research these days, it might not be as far off as we think.
Now, that's a thought-provoking note to end on. So to our listener, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the world of eczema. We hope you've gained valuable insights and a renewed sense of hope for managing this common yet often challenging skin condition. And remember, your journey to healthier skin starts today.